The scripture reading comes from one of the wisdom books, Ecclesiastes, chapter 8. Let us listen carefully. The inerrant word of God says, "Who is like a wise man, and who knows the interpretation of a thing? A man's wisdom makes his face shine, and the sternness of his face is changed. I say, keep the king's commandments for the sake of your oath to God. Do not be hasty to go from his presence. Do not take your stand for an evil thing, for he does whatever pleases him. Where the word of a king is, there is a power. And who may say to him, 'What are you doing?' He who keeps his command will experience nothing harmful, and a wise man's heart discerns both time and judgment. Because for every matter there is a time and judgment, though the misery of man increases greatly, for he does not know what will happen. So who can tell him when it occurs? No one has a power over the spirit to retain the spirit, and no one has a power in the day of death. There is no release from that war, and wickedness will not deliver those who are given to it. All these I have seen and applied my heart to every work that is done under the sun. There is a time in which one man rules over another into his own hurt. Then I saw the wicked buried, who had come and gone from the place of holiness, and they were forgotten in the city where they had so done. This also is vanity, because the sentence against the evil work is not executed speedily. Therefore, the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. Though a sinner does evil 100 times, and his days are prolonged, yet I surely know that it will be well with those who fear God, who fear before him. But it will not be well with the wicked, nor will he prolong his days, which are as a shadow, because he does not fear before God. There is a vanity which occurs on earth, that there are just men to whom it happens according to the work of the wicked. Again, there are wicked men to whom it happens according to the work of the righteous. I said that this is also vanity. So I commanded enjoyment, because a man has nothing better under the sun than to drink, eat, and be merry. For this will remain with him in his labor all the days of his life, which God gives him under the sun. When I applied my heart to know wisdom and to see the business that is done on earth, even though one sees no sleep, day or night, then I saw all the work of God that a man cannot find out, the work that is done under the sun. For though a man labors to discover it, yet he will not find it. Moreover, though a wise man attempts to know it, he will not be able to find it." So far, reading of God's Word. Beloved in the Lord, as a Christian, what is the most dangerous challenge or problem, if I may call it that way? What is the most dangerous problems for your spiritual well-being? What are the most difficult challenges that can threaten your faith or Christian living? To be a Christian means you have to give up a lot. Like, you have to give up the passing pleasures of this world. You have to give up sinful things, sinful desires. If you have to give one advice to your children or Christian friends, what would that be? To prevent themselves from anything that can threaten their faith. Threaten their faith to the point that they leave God, they leave church, covenant community. What would be your advice to young children, young men or women who's struggling with various challenges? As you continue to live a Christian life, as you continue to deeply meditate the saving grace of Jesus Christ and salvation, how we wretched sinners are saved by the work of Son of God. As you meditate deeply those things, but still you might have experienced at least one or two incidents in your life that made you think maybe it's not worth to be a Christian. Maybe this faith is worthless. You know, I can tell you, as I was a young man, a young child, I can share my own experience briefly as a pastor's kid. There are many things that I couldn't do, and still, of course, for instance, very basic thing as being a Christian, you have to come to church twice on Sunday. Back in my country, they have worship service on Wednesdays and Fridays as well. And you participate worship service, and it seems like as a young child, I thought it's not really rewarding. Like other kids in school, they don't go to church, but they get to watch TV. I didn't have a TV when I grew up, and then all the things they talk about when they come back to school is they talk about all the shows they watched, and then they build friendship. Whereas I was excluded. So as being a Christian means kind of have to give up those kind of things because you're not able to watch on TV on Sunday. You have to be in church. You have to give up, as I said, worldly pleasures. And although I live as a Christian, although I participate those godly things and I give up all those things, it seems like sometimes it's not really rewarding. And then sometimes people wonder, although I live this pious life, right? I live godly life, but there are so many evil things happening in my life. Why? Now, sometimes Christians compare their lives with the wicked people in the world. You see in the news, there are many evil people. They do all sorts of terrible things, and we hope that they perish, but they rather prosper. That there is something about that mentioned in the later part of Ecclesiastes chapter 8. They do so well in this world. They accumulate so much wealth. I can give you some examples. Some renowned dictators in the world, they live long and prosperous life. And they are so proud of what they have gathered, accomplishment, how many people they killed even. They boast of those expensive cars and multi-million dollars worth mansions, which they earned by dishonest gains. And as we see those things, and we struggle, if the Lord lives, why are those evil things happen in the world and in this life? They oppress me and they gain money, not in a proper way, but they prosper. That's what bothers me the most. Whereas my children, my little children struggle with, say, health issues. My Christian relatives, they struggle because of poverty maybe. they got some issues. In the meantime, again, my evil neighbor, he prospers. What's up with that? If everything happens by reason and we say God is sovereign and we confess God's providence, then how do we cope with these evil events that are happening around me? So here are the theme and the points. Who is a wise man before God? First point we're going to see is the wise man's character. And the second point, wise man's behavior. Third point, wise man's life, how he lives out his life. So in our text, the preacher, King Solomon, he shares his own experience. He talks about one of the most difficult questions that challenged him, maybe for his lifetime. That is, as you live in this life, you face both good and evil. You face good things and you face also evil things. And what's happening is, what bothers him the most is that you face the good and evil mixed up. And their consequences, you know, the good people should be rewarded, good people should prosper, and evil people should be punished, but their consequences are also switched. Evil people prosper and righteous oppressed. In the previous chapter, chapter 7, verse 15, I have seen everything in my days of vanity. There is a just man who perishes in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man who prolongs life in his wickedness. Well, Psalm 73 speaks about that. My step had nearly slipped, for I was envious of the boastful when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. There are no pangs in their death. Their strength is firm. They are not in trouble as other men, nor are they plagued like other men. So when they die, they have no pain. They live rich and famous. As I grew up, I heard this expression that many people said, you know, we have South Korea and North Korea. In the North, we have a brother Kim. We call him Brother Kim. The dictator Kim Jong-un. Kim Dynasty. In North Korea, already three generations of Kims ruling that nation with brutality. And I heard many people, especially Christians, are saying, if there's a God, which we believe there's a God, then how come God is not doing anything to that man? Already for over 70 years, three generations of Kims. I mean, they passed down their power to their sons. And they live prosperous life. A previous one, the Kim Jong-il, he died because of health issues, but he had health issues because he ate too much. And it upsets many people that when they died, they never faced a consequence. They never faced a judgment for their crimes. So, we can relate to that. You know, like, in this nation in Canada, there are many evil people too, but they rather prosper. And that we are so stressed and challenged when we compare our situation with the evil men, and we are stressed emotionally, and we should be. And we are upset because of these things, and we should be. It is perfectly normal for Christians to be upset when they see evil things in this, and especially evil people prosper in this world. But one thing that I'd like to mention here is that we should be careful, because sometimes people become so weary. People think everything is meaningless to the point that they even walk away from faith. Especially when bad things, evil things happen to me and my family and my relatives. When that happens to me personally, say like losing a loved one, a divorce, marriage problems, relationship problems, We see that some people even walk away from the Lord because of that. We see some people take a break from taking a long vacation, from coming to church, coming to the Lord because of that. Some people use the expression, I'm going to take a break from worship service, which I think is nonsense, because how can you take a break from, so to speak, drinking spiritual water? How can you take a break from having bread and having a meal? But you see, sadly, in reality, you see some people in church, they're drifting away slowly and slowly. Our text says clearly here, if I may paraphrase, the righteous man receives the punishment which he does not deserve, which the evil man deserves, and evil men receive the rewards which righteous man is supposed to receive. Perhaps this one is the most difficult trials for many Christians. Difficult question, it is. How do we understand that? So the preacher gives an answer. How do we overcome or answer this difficult question? So previously, the preacher draws our attention to God, God of afterlife. The preacher wants us to look at God who controls not only this life, but also afterlife. So the thing is, if you're trying to figure out the answer for all those difficult things, the difficult questions in this life, puzzling and even disturbing questions such as, how come I'm not doing well and the evil person is doing well? Well, in this life, the answer is you will find no answer in this life. You try to figure out all those logistics and of all the events under the sun, you will find no answer, because everything under the sun is vanity, the preacher said. But here's the thing. Yet if you consider God's judgment, which will happen after life, after you die, because God controls not only this life, but also afterlife, this will change your perspective dramatically. And that's what he's been saying from chapter 1 to chapter 7. And this he calls. So now the theme of the true wisdom continues. So that is the wisdom. You have to know first who God is. God who controls not only this life, but also afterlife. Also judgment. And another thing, under the sun, vanity. And all people are wicked and evil under the sun. So you have to keep that in your mind. So the wisdom that he's talking about is about all those things. You have to know all those things. And that theme of wisdom continues in our chapter 8, simply speaking, has two questions. First, verse 1, who is like a wise man? Do you want to be wise? I would love to be. Who is like a wise man? Who is wise man? The second, who knows the interpretation of a thing, which means who knows how things are how the system works in this life and the afterlife. So those two questions are about wisdom. In order to explain what kind of wisdom that is in biblical wisdom, this biblical wisdom is different from the worldly wisdom. The preacher says like this at the end of verse 1. A man's wisdom makes his face shine, and the sternness of his face changed. A man's wisdom makes his face shine. Does my face shine? The sternness of his face is changed. So what does that mean? Man with wisdom, his face shines. The sternness, hardness, the seriousness of face changed, which means goes away. Well, by those two characteristics, the preacher gives an answer to the previous question. Who is like a wise man? Who understands how things work in this world? So, this description of man of wisdom, man with wisdom, portrays a person who accomplished something great, or something wealthy, who gained something great, especially wealth and fame. Think about the preacher himself, the Solomon. He had wealth, he had fame, he accomplished so much in his lifetime. He built the temple, he built great palace with the wisdom that God has given him. Those who possess and enjoy great amount of wealth and fame, we say they look different. Not necessarily partially because they wear good clothes, they put so much things on skin and face. Not only that, they eat well, they look different. Their face, so to speak, shines. That's what it means. It does not mean that his face shines literally like a light. No, it's a metaphor. Those who live well, their face look bright and very good. But those who are deeply suffered and exhausted and depressed and oppressed, their face do not shine, so to speak. And those who accomplished so much, those who gained so much wealth and fame, you can see they are always smiling. The sternness of his face changed. In other words, he looks happy and very gentle. I find that is very true. I find that very true, especially when you look at some of the renowned world-class artists or athletes. Many world-class athletes, before they win the championship or Olympic gold medals, I like to watch some of the ping pong. I like ping pong, so I like some of watching ping pong players. Before they earn the gold medal, they are so competitive. They have to work. They have to practice 8-10 hours a day. Very exhausting, and their faces always serious and very stern. Don't talk to me. They don't like to give, sign when you request. They don't want to take a picture with you. But after they win the Olympic gold medal, they're changed. They become more gentle. The sternness of their face is gone. They always smile because they already have achieved the main goal of their life. I think that's very true when it comes to those people who accomplished so much wealth as well. I mean, it could be a little bit different person to person, but generally, in general principle, that's how it works. He's a gentle, the person with the wisdom. So that's what the preacher is talking about here. Gentle, the person with the wisdom, who accomplished so much. The person who knows the interpretation of thing, his face shines. He is gentle. He is easy to talk to. He's not stern. His face has no sternness. His face is gentle. You want to talk to him. You want to be with him. You want to rely on him. He does not sternly insist, although he knows things. He does not sternly insist on his own opinion. He doesn't stubbornly stick to his own principles. His sternness of his face is changed. Rather, he draws people to himself. Now, speaking of this metaphor, wisdom makes his face shine. It is interesting because in the Bible, there are two figures, literally speaking, whose face shone. One is Moses, who received the law, and his face was shining so bright that he had to wear a veil. Another person, as you know, is Jesus Christ at the Mount when he was transfigured. So the main point is the Lord Jesus Christ is the one, the true, humble, and gentle man filled with God's wisdom. When his true glory was revealed, his face shone. His face was shining bright like it's the sun. And then Matthew 11:28 tells us who he is. Come to me, Jesus said, all who are burdened, for I am gentle and lowly. My yoke is easy, and come to me. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, he said. He taught his wisdom to his people. So, a practical application. How do we know that? How do you get this wisdom? How do you make your face shine? Again, this is metaphor. The Bible is not saying something like you have to wash your face to make your face shine. That's not what it means. In other words, it means how do you get rid of your sternness? Well, the answer is very simple. It's very simple. Because according to the preacher in the previous chapter and what he's been saying throughout the book of Ecclesiastes, the answer is, first, you must realize who God is and who we are. You must realize what God is capable of in this life and the afterlife. At the same time, realize man is incapable. Man is not able. God is able. Everything that under the sun, vanity, draws our attention to the Lord in heaven. First, you must acknowledge. That means first you must acknowledge your nature, your sinful and your wickedness and your weakness. Then, that leads to the fear of the Lord. Remember what the preacher said in other book, Proverbs? He said, fear of the Lord is the beginning of the wisdom. You see, as I mentioned briefly, the wisdom that he's talking about is different from the worldly wisdom. Worldly wisdom is all about, well, you work, and you gain money, you gain fame, and you enjoy your life. Pleasure and death. After death, who knows? Maybe that's the end. But who cares? Today you drink and enjoy. Tomorrow you die, kind of thing. That's the worldly wisdom. But whereas the biblical wisdom is very different. Well, in this world, when we speak of wisdom, we like to learn from masters and teachers, those who are influential people, who kind of masters one area of science. We like to listen to them. Those who can inspire many young people. And usually those influential people, they are very proud of themselves. And they enjoy, right? When they teach, they enjoy the sternness of their face. This is how you do it. In this way, you can earn this. You can earn your fame and your wealth, and they like to insist on something they hold on to, and they don't like to change. With the stubbornness, that's the worldly thing. But biblical wisdom, the Bible speaks of gentleness. Although you have a principle, you have to, the purpose of, the reason why you have that wisdom is to convince people, gather people all around you so that they can learn from you, not to drive them away with your sternness. No. And most of all, Bible says the true wisdom begins by acknowledging our weaknesses, our disability. Even those who accomplish so much in this world, even the wealthiest person in this world, even the most powerful king in this world, if you acknowledge who you are, if you truly acknowledge, recognize who you are before the presence of God, you are just dust from the earth. You acknowledge God, you humble yourself. You can never have the sternness on your face. It's a sign of pride. So the practical lesson that we can learn is that know your place. You have to know your place. And you have to know where you are before God. That is the true wisdom. It's very simple. It's right there in the book. Know who you are. Know who God is. Verse 2, it says, I say, keep the king's commandment for the sake of your oath to God. Do not be hasty to go from his presence. Do not take your stand for an evil thing, for he does whatever pleases him. Where the word of king is, there is a power. And who may say to him, what are you doing? Or what are you talking about? Suddenly the preacher talks about a king. Why? Well, some people say this story about king is about the government officials and which God has ordained above us and we should obey them. But if you look at the context, that's not the main point of this passage. It's not talking about obedience to the government. That's not the point. Rather, this is an example. This is an example by which the preacher wants to bring his main point. That is, again, in verse 1, who is the wise man? Who knows the interpretation of a thing? Again, wise man knows his place. He knows how to humble himself. Although he is wealthy or famous, although he's accomplished so much in his life, he knows, because he knows where he is before God, he fears God. Just like people should fear the king. That's why there's an example here. And again, the preacher calls that wisdom. To be wise before God is to acknowledge God, to humble himself, to behave before God. To behave before God, it's like behaving before a king. Verse 4, when the king speaks, nobody turns around and goes to his home. Nobody turns around and ignores the king. Nobody does that. Nobody says, wait a minute, king, pause for a second. I have something to do in my home, or I need to sleep. No one does that. Or when king speaks, no one interrupts him, says, what are you doing? Rather, you must listen. You have to listen. Even if it doesn't make sense to you, even if it's against my reasoning and my own opinion, you still have to listen. That's how that works. Likewise, when God speaks, you listen, like you listen to a king. That's why there is an example. Again, why? Because that's a wise thing to do. you must know your place. You must know where you are and where God is. You are right here, and God is above you. Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Verse 5. He who keeps his command will experience nothing harmful. Isn't that true? If you follow the king's command, you will experience nothing harmful. It's even more true when you apply this to God's commandment. When you follow God's commandment, you will experience nothing harmful. You see the parallel here? You obey the king. You obey God as if you obeyed king. Verse 6 is crucial. And a wise man's heart discerns both time and judgment, because for every matter, there's a time and judgment. Though the misery of man increases greatly. Time and judgment. That's the key concept in the chapter. Time and judgment. What is this time and judgment that the preacher is talking about? Is it my time? According to my plan? According to my wish? What is this judgment that preacher is talking about? Is it my judgment according to my own understanding? No. In the context, it means it's God's judgment, God's own time. The same person who wrote this passage said in Proverbs chapter 3, verse 5, do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he shall direct your path. Of course, there are so many things happening in my life, in your life, and some are beyond our own understanding. Evil things happen in life all the time, frequently. I do not understand why. I have no clue when my situation will get better. When? The question of time. How? Who will make it better? So the message is very simple. You want to be like a wise man. You want to be a wise man. First, you have to have God in your life all the time. In your consideration, you have to have God. You have to acknowledge him. You acknowledge him, that means you have to live a life of obedience. Just like people obey their king. If there's a king, you have to obey him. You also have to submit to God's will. Sometimes in our human mind, that doesn't make sense. Sometimes God does not give the result that I expected or I wanted. And even when that happens, you show humility. Submitting to God and not by leaning on your own understanding. Again, I emphasize, the wisdom is to know our place, where we are, who we are. We're corrupt, sinful, depraved human beings. And at the same time, you have to know who God is. Therefore, even if disaster happens due to our sin and our foolishness, but God, out of his infinite wisdom, out of his mere grace, he gives good things in his time. Maybe not in my time, but in his time. Again, this concept, time and judgment, is very crucial when we live our lives in this world. This concept, time and judgment, not only important, not only in this life, but also when we understand the redemptive whole history. Galatians 4, verse 4. The most important moment of human history, the coming of Jesus Christ. Apostle Paul describes it as, in the fullness of time, in the fullness of time. Think about the second coming of Jesus Christ. When Christ comes to judge the living and the dead, it will be in God's time. No one knows exactly when that is going to happen. We see in Revelation 6:10, the saints in heaven, the elders, crying out, "How long, O Lord, a people are being persecuted, the blood shed? How long, O Lord, holy and true, until you judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on earth?" And the answer, "Until both the number of their fellow servants and their brethren who would be killed as they were was completed." So there's a time, God's time, not our time. Whether you are aware of God's time and His judgment or not, it makes a huge difference. It makes a huge difference as you live in this world. Going back to the first issue that I mentioned, when evil people prosper, good people suffer, you can be upset about it. But the wise man, the conclusion that the preacher makes, is the wise man does not have to be too obsessed by those things, because he knows the principle. There is the God's judgment, there's God's time, and he leaves all those matters to God because it is out of his control. That's what the preacher is talking about in verse 14. And he makes the conclusion in verse 15. "So I command enjoyment, because a man has nothing better under the sun than to eat, drink, and be merry. For this will remain with him in his labor all the days of his life that God gives him under the sun." So what is he saying here? Is he saying that we should, it's all about pleasure, that we should just eat and drink and just be happy in this life? Is he saying those are the best things that you can achieve in this world? No, that's not what he's saying. What he's saying is this. Pretty much, there's nothing you can do about it. That's what he's saying. Under the sun, you have to know your limits. God placed everything on your path. God planned everything for you. The path is not something that you can alter, you can invent, or you can discover as if you are a pioneer. No, you're not a pioneer. Therefore, again, back to the main point, acknowledge him. Acknowledge his sovereignty, and within his sovereignty, again, this is very important, within his plan, you live with your diligence. You do your best within his sovereignty, his plan. You work hard. Of course, you have to work hard. You work hard with gladness and thankfulness. You do enjoy the fruits of your labor. You eat and drink. Does not mean you can do whatever you want. That's not what it means. Within the boundaries that God has provided to you, you enjoy. Acknowledging his sovereignty. "In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he shall direct your path." That's what it means. That's what it means. A man has nothing better under the sun than to eat, drink, and be merry. Because you don't know what will happen in the future. If you're worried about it, what will happen in the future, some people are very worrisome, insecure, anxiety, right? Very anxious about what will happen in the future, what will happen to my son, my children, and so on. If you're too anxious about everything, you're not able to enjoy what you earned. You're not able to enjoy what God has provided to you in his sovereignty. So go eat, drink. Do not worry. That's what it means. Because, again, you don't know what will happen in the future. Some people say if you can predict what can happen, even within 2 minutes or 5 minutes in the future, you will be the most powerful person in the world. I think that is true. I think about that. What if I can predict what will happen just 2 minutes after? I could be the richest person in the world. I can be the most powerful person in the world. But God didn't allow that. And we can't. But God does. So here's the main point. Trust Him. Trust Him. We can worry about things to a certain extent. But beyond what we are capable of, leave it. Leave those difficult matters into the Lord's hands, who controls this life and the afterlife. As you acknowledge Him, He will guide you faithfully.